Miss a show? All your faves ready and waiting on the ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man.
Hey, girl.
Waddle and Sylvie on the air. What a weekend. We were sitting out in Oak Forest a couple of days ago, even before the show, getting ready. We were cutting videos, doing promos, and then the news came down that Javi was traded.
That phone rang.
Right. And then Kimbrel was traded. And then KB was traded right up against the deadline. And all these big deals went down, and it was one of the craziest Fridays we've ever seen on the air. I said on Friday, sitting there, that outside of like celebrating the championships from the Blackhawks or the Cubs championship that we celebrated, I'm not sure if we've ever had a crazier show than that.
From a Cubs perspective, it went from the most interesting, crazy day to the most unnecessary to even watch weekend, if you follow what I'm saying. Like, I'm dialed into what the Cubs are doing on Friday. By the time we get to Saturday and everybody had been shipped off to their new homes, like, I find watching Cubs baseball, this is the first time in how many years?
Right.
6 years that I haven't, like, nothing's on the line, so watching Cubs baseball is different for the first time in 6 years.
It's sort of been that way, though, for a month, even though Baez and Rizzo and Bryant were playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, ever since that losing streak, it's kind of like been, these are the first games since 2014 that don't really matter.
Anything.
Remember when I went to that Cardinals game with my wife, I took the Friday off.
Yeah.
We had anticipated going as that was going to be a big game. And then it turned out it wasn't a big game. And we're like, okay, it's cool. KB had a nice pinch hit double that game. It was fun. And
but you were still, there was still some intrigue. Where will Bryant go?
Right.
Where will Rizzo go? Who will be kept? Well, what will happen? And it was great theater. And then I found myself this weekend. I did not, I'm not going to lie to you, I did not watch 1 second of the Cubs games.
Right. Look, I bought my Rafael Ortega jersey, though. I mean, so I'm set there. No, I did more reading on the Cubs than watching on the Cubs. I spent a lot of time, as I was getting knocked by some Cubs fans, watching a lot of the Sox, tweeting about a lot of the Sox. I mean, they had themselves an interesting weekend. I mean, Abreu gets hit on Friday. They win that first game. That second game is like back and forth. They've got a big lead. They blow the big lead. Cleveland takes the lead. They come back. They end up losing by one. And then yesterday, the walk-off with Goodwin and, you know, Zavala, two of the three home runs. Like, that was, and Kimbrel pitched well in both of
games.
His outings.
Yeah.
Like, it was a crazy weekend for the White Sox, and it was a crazy Friday for the Cubs. And then it's like, okay, tell me something about Pete Armstrong Crow, or is it Pete Crow Armstrong?
Whatever. Saturday and Sunday were for Cubs, it was who dis?
Yeah. I was doing a lot of reading, and both of his parents, by the way, are actors.
Yeah, you know I don't read, so I'm going to have to go by what you say.
Yeah, I think his dad is from Naperville.
I believe that is correct.
Yes. So I was trying to find out about all the Cubs from a Cubs standpoint, and okay, they were playing Washington. I told you, by the way, that game would probably go under. It did on Friday, but it was off the board, so couldn't gamble.
They got off, to a pretty hot start, wasn't it? Like 3-2 in the first couple of innings, and then they shut it down.
How do you know if you don't even watch?
That was Friday.
Yeah.
Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, that was the cutoff.
All right, so we want to hear from you. And Han and Hoyer were both on the radio station from both sides of town standpoint. Sox fans, you're in go-for-it mode. You got Kimbrel. You saw a little bit of what they're thinking about the way they can bring these guys into even tie games, late, close games, late, how they could use both Kimbrel and Hendricks. You saw a couple of wins, a 9-game lead for the White Sox. And I've heard mostly, and I don't know if it's if they're the loud minority or if they're the loud majority. I've heard all weekend from angry Cubs fans. Cubs fans who are not happy this went down. Cubs fans who are not happy with what Jed had to say.
I would ask those fans, would you have preferred that all three of the big three, Javi, Chris Bryant, and Anthony Rizzo, we're all in the second or third year of monster contracts that they would based on baseball people looking at them, would have looked at them now and said, wow, these guys, good for them. They got their money, but they're overpaid.
Right, right. We've got Hayward's contract. And oh, by the way, now we got Bryant for $250 million, and we got Javi for $200 million, and we got Rizzo for $125 million. Would you be happier with that, with the team that has shown you
yes.
that they aren't going anywhere? Like, I've said I see both sides of this.
And I agree.
I understand the skepticism, as you pointed out on Friday with Ricketts. Understandable. Totally get it. I'm fine with that take. I totally get that emotionally it was really a heartbreaker to just see your favorite Cubs, maybe of your lifetime, all walk out the door in a span of 24 hours, from Thursday's Rizzo trade to all the deals made on Friday at the deadline. But again, I said this on Friday. They did not let go of the 98 Bulls.
Thank you.
Was not Jerry Reinsdorf not allowing the Bulls to go for a four-peat. This wasn't a team that had just won three in a row and they watched the greatest basketball player of all time walk out the door. Like, people got so mad at me inside that Cubs fan base in 18 when I called them a dead team walking. And I was labeled by some Cubs fans as a hater or someone who is, quote, not a real Cubs fan. Because I saw them in 18 and they petered out and they couldn't hit. They had good, and I'm like, oh, this is great. We, you know, here we have it's Schwarber coming up, and then we got KB coming up, and then it's Rizzo coming up, and then it's Contreras coming up, and then it's Javi coming up, and look at all these great players in a row. And at the end of the day, they had two runs. They would score, remember that stat? Sure. They'd score 10 runs or they'd score one or two. And I was the bad fan because I said, dead team walking, I don't get it. And then Theo, sure enough, came out in that press conference and said, our offense is broken. And then they tried to fix it by scapegoating the hitting coach. And they got rid of Chili Davis. And then they had a lame duck season with Joe Maddon in 19. And then in 19, they didn't even make the playoffs. And then in 20, the Marlins. One of my buddies tried to say, hey, your Cubs turned into the Florida Marlins. I'm like, first of all, the Florida Marlins have two World Series titles of my lifetime, and so do the Cubs and the White Sox in the last 100 years, okay? So say what you want about the Marlins, and the Marlins came into Wrigley Field last year.
And shoved.
And they swept the Cubs, didn't they?
Yes.
They won two in a row?
That is correct.
And my team couldn't score again. And so why am I love those guys. It wasn't working anymore. They were all free agents. You couldn't just sit with them and overpay them to continue to not achieve what you were hoping for them to achieve and just say, okay, well, we're stuck. Like, they're trying to do something about it. I don't know how much I trust Ricketts. Like, there were some things that Jed said today that I wasn't so sure about, but I'm sure not going to be here on Monday after the trade deadline or this past Friday and pretend that I didn't have a lot of issues with this team going back to 2018. This was the result of all the bad from 18, 19, 20, and here the losing streak in 2021. It had to happen.
If you go back even to 2017, and it was in the NLCS, right? They got beat by the Dodgers 4-1.
Yes, they
did. So if you look at the totality of this team in the postseason from 17 through last year, they're 1-8 in their last 9 playoff games. They have had also, guys, a top 5 payroll. Not this year, but in the past, they've had a top 5 payroll on average the last 5 or 6 years, right? So money has been spent. You can argue it hasn't been spent wisely, but money has been spent. I think you can also, you know, argue that a lot of these guys were offered contract extensions.
Yeah, Jed talked about that. You want to hear that? This was Jed earlier today, because this was my biggest takeaway from Cap and Jay Hood. They did a really good job with Hoyer and Hahn, and they had both of them on today. And he was asked the question, why couldn't they re-sign any of these guys?
The only thing I will say is that while frustrating, I put my head on the pillow every night knowing that we put our best foot forward. The extensions that we offer these guys will hold up exceptionally well. Historically, they'll hold up exceptionally well against the open market. And I don't know why guys didn't want to sign. I don't know why guys didn't want to even counteroffer oftentimes. I don't know. And because every one of these guys would say they wanted to stay in Chicago. We want to be a Cub. But then when we sit down and do negotiations, that wasn't how they acted. And you know, I see a guy like Lance Lynn, who comes to Chicago and, you know, signs an extension. He certainly, you know, could have gotten more on the open market this winter, but hey, I want to stay here. I want to be a White Sox. And, you know, that wasn't something, you know, other than Kyle Hendricks, who I admire for really rolling up his sleeves with us, we didn't have that. And so, it's a source of incredible frustration for me, but at the same time, it's a source of zero second guessing. It's a source of zero, you know, analysis from my end. What could we have done? Because I look at it and I know what was offered, and I know what the dialogue was. And I think we, like I said, we put our best foot forward. We tried our hardest, and you know, those efforts were not reciprocated.
As if that wasn't tough enough, he used the White Sox knife right. to needles some of those players, saying, look, Lance Lynn took the White Sox money. Right. He's having a Cy Young type year. Wait. None of my guys wanted the money that we were offering.
Till we find out exactly, if we ever do, what exactly was offered, it's hard to know how to respond. Like, Lance Lynn took a team-friendly deal. Like, that's where he wanted to be. But Lance Lynn's getting more than that on an open market, isn't he?
Well, use the Rizzo compensation reports as your guide. The reports were Rizzo wants 125.
Right.
They offered Rizzo 70.
Right.
Does a $70 million offer to Anthony Rizzo look good now?
Well, that's what... I don't know what they ultimately offered Javi, and that may stand up as well. I think that's
what he's saying. He's saying they all thought they were worth more, and in the last 2 to 3 years, they've all proven
that
they're not worth the money that they wanted from the Cubs. Chris Bryant ain't worth the money Scott Boras wanted from the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo now is lucky if he gets $70 million yeah. long term, and Javi's going to be lucky to get $150.
Well, that's why I'm saying that I said this at the start of the season. You may ultimately find out that their desire not to pay these guys what they wanted is the best overall decision the organization could make. Because you don't want those guys at price tags that are considered to be significantly overvalued. Now you have to go out there and you got to find guys to fill those spots. You're going right. to have to spend money, whether you spend it in 2022 or, that's where some of the uncertainty exists, especially with what Jed had to say today. Are you going to try to get right back on that horse? Are you going to take some time? You know, I don't think you need to do complete rebuilds in Major League Baseball any longer, especially if you're a big market team. You can do both.
Right. Jed said that in today's interview, and he said it in the past. 312-332-3776. So look, Waddle proposed to you something. Would you rather be sitting here with Chris Bryant making $250 million, Anthony Rizzo $125 million, and Javi $200 million, what they all wanted, and this team going nowhere? Or would you have rather stayed pat and just let them play it out and then get nothing for them? At least they got a bunch of prospects, which hopefully some will pan out. That's why I don't understand why we're so angry.
Some people would argue that you did this too late. You could have made these moves a year earlier right. and actually gotten more in return, possibly.
And they're not without mistakes. I think a lot of their sure. mistakes that Jed and Theo made are the reasons why they were in this position now. 312-332-3776. There's also something that Jed said on Cap and Hoodie today that I totally disagreed with. I want to get that. But you've had 48 hours or so, even more, to sort of digest all this, Cubs fans and Sox fans. How do you feel about your team? As they had a thrilling weekend, taking 2 out of 3 from Cleveland. You see Kimbrel, you see Hendricks, the way it worked these last couple of days. 332-3776.
This is Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Take some calls at 312-332-3776. There's a lot going on. The baseball trades. Bears practice today. Bulls free agency at 5. Are they going to sign an offer sheet with Alonzo Ball? We're watching it all. We could have breaking news today. Shout out to everyone who watches the show each and every day. We're back in the studio today. You can see us on camera. You can react in the chat box. You can listen as normal.
Glad to see the First Midwest Bank State Street studio actually survived Lollapalooza.
Oh, yeah. We got a couple of Lollapalooza audio pieces that, that Chris Black put together interviewing. And I can't wait. I purposely did not ask Waddle off the air on how things went in the Waddle household for Lala. We'll find that out later. But you can always watch us. It's twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. There's an app with that as well, where you download the Twitch app and then just search us, ESPN 1000 Chicago. Make sure you follow us. Let me play you a couple of more Jed bites, and then we'll get to the callers. I thought this was interesting because I think this is where you and I are, that Jed has been vocal about this. Remember, we did at Swift and Sons Tavern at Wrigley Field. We had Theo and Jed there a couple of years ago in the same show. And he was talking about how he throws his phone because he gets so mad that the offense doesn't produce like they should. With the names are so good, but the offensive output isn't good. And so Jed summed up how he's been frustrated with a lack of talent or at least production that they've had.
This group with this much talent as a group, we're not a great offense. And I think that, you know, ultimately, I think that, over the last 3 or 4 years, some of these players had showed glimpses of the talent they have. But certainly, you know, especially over the last 2 years, some of these players that I think have immense talent hadn't played as well. So, I mean, it's going to take me a while, I think, to digest that also, because I think you can be proud of it. But at the same time, also think, you know, have some frustration about, you know, why did this offense continue to sputter despite the talent in this offense?
So that's why they're in the position they're in, and because of all the other mistakes they made as a front office.
The last 2 years, the three top guys, their numbers all declined. All three of them. Now, again, I said 2020 is a difficult year for a lot of different people just because of the nature of the pandemic. But, like, every one of them struggled based on previous production.
And then Chris Bryant got off to the great start, and then in June hit like 100. You know, went like 48 at bats without an extra base hit.
Yeah, he bounced back from 2020, but like it's not the Chris Bryant that everyone fell in love with in 15 and 16. I mean, when you look at his numbers,
he's having a nice year.
Yeah,
he's nice.
Right now he's what is he? He would, before he left for San Francisco, he's hitting .267 with an on-base percentage of .358. Both of those are below his career averages.
That's cute. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you see someone that you're attracted to and you're like, "Oh, that person's hot." Like Chris Bryant's numbers, cute. And cute, good personality, nothing like that you would rank a 10 or want to pay $250 million
to? He's a nice 8.5, 8 and change.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? His OPS is 8. Listen, he also can play a lot of positions.
That's his biggest asset.
OPS was 861. I believe his WAR. Do you know whose WAR was better than all of them? Was Javi. Javi's like under a 3. He's like 2.9 WAR right now.
Mm-hmm. So here was the another huge takeaway I had from Jed on Cap and Jay Hood today. Is this a reset or a rebuild? Because there are a difference, right? A reset, you get everyone out. You participate in free agency this offseason. Yeah. You use your funds that you would have given Rizzo and Brian if they would have taken your money and buy as two other guys.
Yeah.
You sign a shortstop. And then you look to build with now the surplus of young talent that you've implemented in the last year with a lot of these trades. And then you hope you're building something for the future without being really bad, or are you rebuilding? Where next year it's going to be pardon our dust again. We're going to sign one-year deals with guys. We're going to flip them at the trade deadline again, and we're not looking to sign anyone long-term. Reset or rebuild, Jed?
Certainly, I think from an organizational standpoint, I think there was a reset of, you know, from having a bunch of players on expiring contracts to now a bunch of young players. I think there's a reset in that, but, you know, I don't know what that means from a time frame standpoint. I don't know what that means from a one loss record standpoint. The only thing I will say is that, listen, I was just like this week, you know, me and my staff in the office, we will do everything we can to, you know, try to put the best product on the field possible. And ultimately all we really are focused on is how do you build the next great Cubs team? You know, I think that, to me, the lasting legacy of this group of Cubs players is that we changed the way people look at Cubs baseball. When we got here, you know, I used to joke that people could name the playoff teams like they're talking about their kids' birthdays, you know, and, you know, no one really expected to make the playoffs. When they did make the playoffs, it was such a big deal. And then they get bounced in the first round and, they would talk about that team for 7 or 8 more years. And we changed that. You know, we got to a place where, you know, losing in the first round was considered devastating and unacceptable. And even losing in the LCS was a disappointment. And I love that because that's what we did as a group, the players, you know, front office, ownership. We changed the way that Cubs baseball is looked at. We're supposed to win now. And no one wants us to build a team that's, you know, plucky and that happens to, you know, be a wild card and lose in the first round. Like, people want us to build a team that they think can win the World Series every year. So that's our goal. That's what we're focused on, is building that next great Cubs team.
All right. So
I feel that there has been a little. There was several weeks ago or a month, however long ago it was, where he was pretty defiant that this will not be a total rebuild, right?
Yeah.
When there was a conversation, I'm remembering.
The rebuilds don't happen like they do anymore.
It sounds like he's a little less certain that that is going to be the approach. I know he also, I think, at some point referenced the CBA and how that may change the face of the sport.
And my biggest takeaway, and we have another bite later, we'll play, where he talked about he can't tell you exactly what the plan is yet. Right. Because he's got to see the CBA. He's got to know the rules. But that's concerning when Cubs fans hear that they sold, but they sold without fully knowing what the plan is. But he did insist, once they come up with a plan, and this is kind of like the Blackhawks and the Bulls, Blackhawks now, Bulls from a few years ago, that they will follow that plan. They're not going to, like, oh, well, 1 year, say, well, this guy's available, we're going to sign him now. Like, they'll follow the plan.
What their haul in all these trades was, the majority of it was pitchers, right? I mean, there were some position players. Obviously, you got Madrigal, you got the kid with three names from the Mets. But the basic haul here.
Kid from Oakland is an outfielder.
Yeah, we'll talk to Keith Law about it 3:15 today and get his impressions on what they got back. But a lot of it was trying to kind of rebuild their minor league situation with their pitchers, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's take some calls and then we'll play some more Jed. And the one thing that I didn't like from Jed today is when he said, we said we were going to give this team one more try. We were going to honor them by giving them one more try. And if they really wanted to honor them and give them one more try, they never would have traded Yu Darvish.
Correct.
So that's not factual. Because you cannot go into a year where Kyle Hendricks is your only known pitcher of substance and say, we're going to give this last group a spin.
Well, you can go back a year prior to that as well and know where their intentions were when they decided not to re-sign Nicholas Castellanos
A lot of mistakes.
There were signs. There were signs that they were pivoting and turning in a more cost-effective direction.
James and Gurney, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, James?
Hey, great job, boys. Hey, while I really enjoyed your 15 most important, just want to throw that out there. And you guys have hit every single point that needed to be hit. And I'm in the camp of a little bit too late, but neither here nor there. But there's a trade that bothered me a little bit. It was the Kimball trade. It wasn't for Nick. I think Nick and Horner are kind of the same player, and one are expendable. But I wasn't too happy with Cody Hoyer. But I heard on the radio this morning that something's wrong with Craig's son's heart. And he really wanted to stay in Chicago. I'm telling you right now, Jed did that. Even as a business, that's the kind of thing that makes me think, you know what? That's the kind of action that happens that just really fills my heart. You know, Sylvia, I'm a big proponent of St. Jude. So for Jed to do that and to send Craig over to the White Sox, and it had something to do with his son's heart, to me, that's the kind of thing you can build on. I know it might sound really weird, but that just really was a class act move. So it was time to go. But if that's true, that's pretty awesome. I don't know what you guys
James,
think.
Thanks.
Enjoy your day.
So here's what I heard. I heard Cap and Hoodie reference it, that Chris Bryant said something about that, like,
thought he said he had a daughter that had a heart problem.
And they were apprehensive about moving because they want to keep their child with these same doctors. And I don't know if Jed made the move with the White Sox strictly because of that or if it all worked out for the best.
Well, think also that, and we also heard rumblings that, look, they, in some ways, when you wait to the end of the trade deadline, you get more. Sometimes you don't. Because there was conversations or rumblings that, you know, some of the other deals where you could have gotten more for the guy you were trading were already made. And that some of the teams that were in deal mode didn't have the prospects that you were hoping for. They had already been moved.
Right. We'll ask Keith Law that. Jeff calling in the car. Jeff, you're on ESPN 1000.
How are you guys doing?
We're good.
I think this started a long time ago when they got rid of John Malley as hitting coach. When everything was going well, they got rid of him as an excuse for I have no idea why. Also, Theo and Jeff, in my opinion, have not done what they did their first 4 years, the last 6 years. They were trading prospects. They were getting in and out of stuff. This team, when they won the World Series, was not built correctly by all the swings and misses. And they could have got out of some of these players for a whole lot more and got stuff to maybe continue the process by getting out a certain player here and there 3 years ago. 3 years ago, this should have been started, and maybe not in group, but as a one, then another one, and then another one, as when they started, it should have been done. Also, I don't think they've drafted very well in the last 4 years. When you go back and look at their draft and their signing of international product prospects, not very good. They're not getting very many or very much out of any of those players.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
You have to go back to Schwarber. I was looking at this the other day. I know Horner is one of their first-round picks. You got to go back all the way to Schwarber to look at a guy that has contributed mightily for them.
It hasn't panned out yet. 312-332-3776. So how do you feel? Also, I usually don't subscribe to the, hey, no one respects us on the South Side attitude. But there is a blatant disrespect out there today. Plus, Joey on the South Side, we'll start with you. There are other callers on there as well. Joey wants to say that he's upset with La Russa, and you know I'm always here to take those calls. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Said to me, Sylvie, you're not on our side of the fence. You don't know how it feels sometimes to be a White Sox fan. Because I think a lot of times they'll play the card Sox fans will. No one respects us. I mean, like, and then when they use the no one, like, it's awfully broad. I mean, you know, the media. Or
Bears
the,
use that. They've used that rallying cry for quite some time.
You know, ESPN omitted them, remember, from some of the championship teams in Chicago. I get their scars there. And I usually believe that it's just sort of the mentality, and they sort of at times enjoy that. Kind of like how you used to say...
Merck liked to present himself as the lovable loser guy.
Like some Cubs fans, they secretly liked being the oh, woe is me Cubs fan.
Gives you something to complain about.
We never have any success.
Some people like to complain.
And then I think sometimes Sox fans are like, no one respects us, man. What do you want me to say? That's why I got mad at you. No one respects us.
Everybody has picked the White Sox not only to win their division, but to be the front runner in the American League, or a lot of people have.
But I guess there's this power rankings I've seen going around Twitter. I don't know who Ben Verlander is. It's from Fox. He's a writer at Fox, I guess. I'm not sure if I should know who Ben Verlander is, but he's got his... At least the graphic shows his top 10 power rankings. Mm. And I always sort of laugh. It's not college football. It's not the BCS back in the day where you had to be in the top, you know, two to get in the championship game or whatever, and the top four to get into the playoffs.
Power rankings will have, by Ben or anybody else, will have nothing to do with where the White Sox find themselves in the postseason.
But this is a blatant kick in the balls, I think. This is a total slap in the face. I think you're trying to rile up Sox fans by doing this. The graphic shows his top 10, and it goes Giants 1, Astros 2, Dodgers 3, Rays 4, Brewers 5, Red Sox 6, Padres 7, Yankees 8, Yankees, Blue Jays 9, Athletics 10. And he doesn't even have the White Sox in the top 10. Now you're poking the bear to poke the bear.
Yeah.
You're trying to be, look at me, look how cute I can be. I don't think the White Sox, I mean, for what they've done, and now they've created perhaps the best bullpen in baseball. They have one of the best starting rotations. Now, sure, you may be a little concerned about Rodon here. But they're getting guy once Aloy comes back again.
Yes.
Robert comes back.
They have a 585 winning percentage. That's lower than the Rays, the Red Sox, and the Astros in the American League, and it's below the Brewers, the Giants, and the Dodgers in the National League.
This
just
is
based on win percentage.
You're ignoring them now. You are trying to be too cute.
Yeah.
And you are trying to be contrarian, and you are ignoring the White Sox. They're going to win. They have the biggest lead in baseball, don't they, still at nine games?
A nine-game lead, and the next closest, I believe, is the Brewers over the Reds with a seven-game lead.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's a power ranking, and it's one man's opinion, but it, to me, it is blatant disrespect. Joey on the South Side, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Joey?
Hey, what's up, guys?
You tell us.
Big fan. Hey, Sylvie, this is your buddy, your comedian buddy, Joey, off Instagram.
Oh,
man.
Nice. What's up, man? Joey the Clown, right?
Yeah, Joey Villa Gomez. I've been trying to call in a few times, but, you know, it's hard to get in.
So let me explain. Joey is a great comedian from Chicago, does a lot of shows around town. He's on Instagram. I followed him. He's listened to the show, from what I gather, for a while, and now Joey and I go back and forth. We talk White Sox a little bit as we slide into each other's DMs.
Oh, really?
Yes, we do, right?
Yeah, we're DM buddies, man.
Yeah, I like
that. Do you guys see life the same way, or do you guys battle a little bit?
I think we see life the same way. We're both reasonable baseball fans.
I like that.
Both of you are not fans of Tony La Russa. Is that what we're getting at?
No, actually, I'm calling to say I was wrong about Tony. I didn't like Tony at first, and now I love Tony, man. Did you see how he ran out there at half a mile an hour? Like he was willing to break hips, knees, any kind of bone for Jose Abreu, man, and I love it.
I thought it was a little bit of a overreaction for him to actually push Perez.
Tony La Russa.
Oh, yeah, that was an overreaction, but
I mean, just incensed. He's barking at Perez, the catcher.
I think Tony is saying, "We'll take care of our guy. You go over there."
Don't
push the catcher.
But see, that's the thing. You guys ever watch those viral videos of like two old guys fighting?
I love it. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're
just swinging and missing. Like that's why I saw that in Tony. Like, yo, he's out there like swinging his walker. He's willing to die for the team. And when he did that thing with Yermin, back when Yermin hit the home run off the 3-0, I was getting ready to get rid of Tony. I'm like, what are you doing? But then, I'm sorry, I'm a big baseball fan. This is where I found the reasonable part of that.
All right,
if Tony was yelling at him to take the pitch and he didn't take the pitch, they're going to get in trouble. Like, you didn't listen to your boss, man. So, you know, that's baseball. So you're mean, pull the whole crybaby stuff. The Sox are still winning. This is how I feel about Tony now. Every young guy that we call up from AAA has been showing up. And I feel that they're doing that for Tony because they know who Tony La Russa is. You can come from any country. You're a baseball fan. You know who Tony La Russa is, and I just feel that they're the ones playing hard for him.
Joey, thanks.
I'm a Tony fan now.
All right,
so
there you go.
That makes one of you guys.
I have not gone to that baseball church yet.
I will say this: I'd like to slide into a pew for the Church of Rick Hahn.
Yeah,
because I think Rick Hahn, I don't know at the end of the year if Rick Hahn will win GM of the year or front office man of the year. But I don't think anybody's had any better year than Rick Hahn.
We could play you some of the sound from Rick Hahn. We'll do that in the after the next break. But he was very good, too. He talked about signing Lance Lynn and giving up the players they gave up. Make that Robert and Berwyn. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Robert?
Hey, I just kind of wanted. It's funny, me and Joey had a similar call for Sylvie. Just Sylvie was just so hard on Tony in the beginning, and I've always been a fan of him. And I just wanted to see if you know, kind of Sylvie would kind of recognize that Tony is doing a great job considering the circumstances. We've lost so many players, and obviously, you know, he's, you know, you could make jokes about him being old and everything like that, but obviously, you know, leadership matters, and you could see the team does. You know, there was a funny, I remember, I think it was one of the players that kind of made the analogy that it was a bit of a family, that he was the dad kind of, you know, type of analogy. And, you know, you respect a man like that. So I was just wondering, you know, would Sylvie, you know, actually recognize that he's doing a good job? I don't think he'll apologize for everything he'd said about him, but would you at least recognize that,
no,
you know,
leadership? No, you know, Robert, what I'm calling you and the people who just look at the record and say Tony's done a good job, you guys are LaTruthers. That's what you guys are. You heard of the Mitch Truthers? These are the LaTruthers. Because they're all in on the La Russa Truthers. The LaTruthers. Because, Robert, how much credit did you give their manager last year?
I thought he was a decent coach, but we knew he was a bridge coach.
Well, what do you mean? They won with him, though. They made the playoffs when they weren't expecting to make the playoffs.
You know, right, right.
If we're judging by wins, then why doesn't he still have a job?
Because we know that there are certain coaches that are going to be able to take you to the dream. And that is a championship coach. And a lot of people doubted La Russa. And you know what? I'll be the first one to say, too, that I was always curious to see. Let's see how this works out. Because, obviously, he's been out the game for a bit. And now that he's back, you know, people are respecting his command of the game. Obviously, you can't compare his knowledge to a lot. Obviously, you know, us that we're just viewers. But you know, it inspires people. And it also, I think that a lot that has to do with it is that, you know, people just respect his experience.
All right. Robert, we will see how this plays out. Look, I have said when they win the World Series and he doesn't screw up when the microscope is on him in these critical postseason games, I will give him credit then and say that I was wrong, that he was the right guy to hire and that my big mouth was wrong. I am not going there now. I'm not going to do a flip like they do in the morning.
I see. Okay, so to the championship. So if they win the championship.
Yeah, I will tell you this, too.
And he doesn't screw up.
Rick Hahn has given Tony a lot to work with. That's with regard to a bullpen as well. Like I said,
Gavin Sheets, who was a second overall pick, was not going to come up to the major leagues and have success, that it's La Russa. Brian Goodwin, who's been a journeyman because he's hitting and had a walk-off yesterday, that's because of La Russa. Is Lance Lynn pitching because of La Russa, or is Lance Lynn just good?
Lanson's good.
Yeah, I mean, last year, no one ever called the show last year with Ricky Renteria. Nobody, and they won. They couldn't wait to get Ricky out. But now all of a sudden, we're judging managers just solely based on wins. I want to know if you can tell me specifically, tangibly, what Tony has done besides not screw up for about 6 weeks. I was wrong about that because I thought the next screw up was coming. It's been very quiet on the screw up in the last 6 weeks. 332-3776. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm going to use Jay's line, the LaTruthers. All right. Coming up next, I want to play you Rick Hahn. He does deserve. That's the guy who deserves the credit, Rick Hahn, for what he's built. And we will play you his thoughts on the trade with Kimbrel and signing Lance Lynn. It's all coming up next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I love the people in Twitch chat are coming up with philosophies as to why I don't give Tony credit yet.
What's the best philosophy?
Well, where is
the best explanation for it?
Sylvie is mad that his kids are going to stay White Sox fans because the Sox is going to win the World Series. And that's why I credit everything they've done. I've credited Rick Hahn. I just wanted Rick Hahn as he picked the players.
To pick the manager.
That was my whole philosophy. That I don't like when the owner comes in and after one guy rebuilds the whole team and picks a guy who's been retired for 10 years.
That's why I said I think Rick Hahn's done as good a job as anybody in baseball. I know Andrew Friedman is a guy that gets a lot of credit for good reason. I think Rick Hahn has done a fantastic job. I'm not saying that because you were able to trade for Kimbrel or you added Hernandez. I'm just telling you, over the course of time, the last several years, he's done a fantastic job.
And there's philosophy because of my Cubs love that I have Tony La Russa hate from all the years of the rivalry. It has nothing to do with it. It has zero to do with it. Now, again, I will be here. I'm not going anywhere, hopefully. And I will be here in October as we see this through and how they navigate with him with big decisions and big, you know, we know how managers are under the microscope. You saw how this city ate up Joe Maddon over lots of decisions. So
I've seen you I've seen you eat a plate of crow happily to admit a mistake in the past.
Literally. It was a pigeon because you couldn't eat crow.
That's illegal.
That was for the 2010-2011 Bulls,
right,
who I said had no chance to get the number one seed.
And you ate some pigeon.
Look,
is what you did.
I've been wrong before.
But
I'm not just going to flip with the way the wind blows.
Okay, so when it comes to the impact the guy on the sidelines or in the dugout or the top step, whatever you want to call it, football coach, basketball coach.
Right, power rankings.
Power in terms of the importance of their actions.
Right.
And the direct correlation to the success or failure of the team he or she is coaching.
It's football up here and the rest are down here. Football's number one.
Is it football if that football coach is also the guy like running the offense? Like, because guy's making more decisions than a manager
is. It's not just the head coach. It's all coach. It's the offensive coordinator. It's the defensive coordinator. Right. It's going for it. The head coach decides. Every play has an impact from a coach in football. That's not the case in baseball.
Right. I would, like in baseball, I think that the manager has less of an impact day in and day out than a football coach does. What about basketball? What about hockey?
I think baseball and basketball are probably next. Because you're diagramming plays in basketball. Not all game, but a lot of the coaching goes into the game plan. Manager, there are decisions to be made, but for the most part, it's pitchers executing, right?
Yes.
And it's hitters executing.
Correct. It's now, an individualized sport.
Right. And right now, the math is dictating a lot of the moves the manager makes, right?
Yes.
The
analytics.
Yes.
For sure.
That here's our best chances is what we're going to do. Now it's up to our guys to execute. Would you agree with the way?
That's my point is that, look, I'm not going to tell you a manager is an unimportant factor. I think he sets a tone. I think that, you know, you're doing this 162 times. I think culture can be affected by the manager. There is strategy that is involved. But I would think that in baseball, in level of impact, I'll always put the players at the top. But I go player, GM, manager,
right,
and without even blinking.
They got to make big decisions on when to take a pitcher out, who to go to in the bullpen, when to pinch hit, things like that, when to steal, if you even are stealing these days, you know.
And I don't know, like, if I would rearrange that philosophy for football, because obviously talent is very, very, very important. But a coach, whether it's a defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator, you're calling a play on every snap.
Every snap.
Every snap. You are playing chess.
Especially offense, yes. I want to play you some Rick Hahn. Rick Hahn on making the deals that he made, especially the Cubs deal and giving up Hoyer and Madrigal. This is what Hahn said, trading a lot of the guys he thought of very highly.
It's extremely difficult. And I can tell you some of the conversations we had about Bailey Horn, Connor Pilkington, and the work that our player development people did with him, much less Cody Hoyer, who Jed would tell you we fought like hell to try to keep out of that deal. We knew all along, and you know, Kenny and I talked about this a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, as we sort of saw what was hopefully on the horizon for us, that we were going to get to the point where we were going to have to start moving some of these guys, some of the guys that we had, you know, become enchanted with. Or look, every team in baseball is guilty of overvaluing your own prospects. There's something about when you sign a guy and he first sets foot on campus with your club and you see that growth, much less performance in the big leagues, that you become really, really attached to him. It didn't matter really which from our group we were going to move. We knew it was going to be difficult. But in the end, and you probably heard me say this about 6 weeks ago when talking about the deadline, it comes down to whether the juice is worth the squeeze. And come this year and next year, in our opinions, and hopefully after that too. We're in the midst of doing something potentially special, so it's certainly some pretty good taste in juice, so it's time to make that move.
You love the juice.
Yeah, you love the reference.
Listen, I speaks knew we my had language. To include that.
Yes,
he
does.
He speaks my language. It's not the only reason why I speak so highly of Rick Hahn. I just think he has done a fantastic job. Look, what he's also done, and their entire organization, they found a way not only to scout guys like Robert and others, but they have found a way to get them signed to contracts that are
yes
rewarding to the player, but are team-friendly and manageable for the organization.
It's like, everything that Jed was raging against today. They were able to get in early on them, and they say, look, what's the risk for us? The risk is if they're not as good as we think, we owe them a little bit more, but they're not going crazy with some of their contracts like, that they gave these guys.
People forget, too, that Tim Anderson signed a contract extension a couple of years ago that's very team-friendly.
Yes.
And T.A. is an all-star, about to be a perennial all-star, and that contract is very team-friendly.
They did that with Sale.
Yes.
They did that with Chris Sale, and that was another reason why Boston wanted him. All right, I've got some Sox fans circling.
Okay.
We'll take your calls.
Are they hungry over top of you?
Yeah, that's what Sean says. They're circling, they're hungry, and they're looking to eat a Sylvie carcass. 312-332-3776. And I will tell you the story on why my 7-year-old was crying over the White Sox this weekend. That's up in 2 short minutes.